This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. Five-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts.
Mark Reardon.
It's Donald Trump's party, and his GOP opponents can cry if they want to.
Woke has to stop, because along with everything else, it's destroying our country.
Mark Reardon.
We'll fight hard.
Sitting in his golden palace, Mar-a-Lago, muscling other countries like he's Tony Soprano with a social media site.
Woke is bullshit.
This is the Mark Reardon Show.
Good afternoon. We are at our second stop on the Fish Fry Friday tour at the Knights of Columbus Hall in Cottleville. Sue, it's just like home because we've been here for the last couple of years, right?
It totally is. I love this place.
We're trying to get settled here. We have the roundtable panel getting together. Of course, somebody's late. They're not here.
She's Jane still Duker. Celebrating.
How is it possible that, you know, you're going to a remote location and you don't plan for just a little extra time? I don't know.
Well, Sue. I've done it, so I am not one to speak.
All right, let's introduce those people who are here. Former State Senator Jeff Smith is with us on Jane's side of the table. How are you, Jeff, this afternoon?
I'm great. Beautiful day out. What's up?
I am having trouble hearing people, Matthew, so if there's any way to adjust that a little bit, I'm having trouble hearing the guests. Current State Senator Nick Schwer is with us as well. How are you?
Wonderful.
And let's get kind of going here. I'm just telling you, Ethan, if you can hear us all, please let Matthew out here know, because I hear things very, very uneven, and I can't hear my guests and the people that are right across from the
okay.
table.
Okay, well, we will work on that.
Let's get started with you, because we had this was a bill that related to state control of the police. Some people don't like it referred that way. There's a police commission that will be set up. You shepherded this one through the legislature, and it got passed. It's on Governor Kehoe's desk.
Yeah, I'm proud of this one. It's something that I've been working on for at least 5 years. And I knew when I first started this at the POA hall in the city of St. Louis, when Mayor Tashara Jones started defunding the police, I said, look, if we're going to continue down this road, we need to defend the police in the city of St. Louis. When crime is increasing, population is decreasing, the left likes to celebrate only 150 murders in the city of St. Louis with less than 280,000 population. You're still number one in murders per capita in America. But this is a comprehensive bill. I worked with former Senator Smith and all the different senators, Republicans and Democrats, to get this thing done without using the nuclear option of a PQ. And it's a bill that when you look at all of the different prongs that are in here, whether a Republican, you know, sponsored this or a Democrat, I think this is going to be great for the criminal justice system and making Missouri safe again.
So as not to lose the audience, when he just referred to, you know, the PQ, explain that just so people know what he meant there.
Yeah, so there's a tradition in the Missouri Senate of unlimited debate, and that means that when any senator wants to talk about, you know, any bill, that they can get up and talk. And it's actually one of the coolest traditions, I think, in Missouri politics, is that because it brings people to the table. If you have an issue with something and you can talk for 10 hours, then people need to come to you and say, what's it going to take to get you to sit down? And it actually really works when it's done right, as it has been, I think, this last session. And to your credit, Nick, you did a great job kind of bringing people into a room to say, hey, what's it going to take to make people more comfortable with this? And so the original proposal for the composition of the board got changed some to make it a little bit more palatable to the city senators, and that got them to sit down. Because if people filibuster, if you have five people with you, you can kind of filibuster in perpetuity, you know, take shifts of two of you, go 3-4 hours at a time, and you can go around the clock. So the reason that the PQ, which stands for moving the previous question, it is very rarely done. And when it's done, it makes people really angry because people are really proud of that tradition of unlimited debate that brings people to the table in the right way to strike a compromise. Nick did a great job with that on this bill. I don't love everything in this bill, but working with Senator Roberts and others, we were able to, A, change the way that the state board will be, what it will be comprised of.
The advice and consent of the Senate.
Let's explain that, Nick. Explain how this is going to work. The governor gets to pick one member of the commission, and well, actually the governor picks all, but the mayor is one of the six, right?
Yeah, so the governor gets to pick one unilaterally. Still has to be a citizen within the city of St. Louis. And this is something where, yes, technically the state is involved, but this is a citizen board control bill. So governor gets to pick one straight up. The mayor is on it, whoever that's going to be. And then there are three picks that are left. The pool of candidates that the governor can choose from would be a pick from the mayor, and then picks from the Ethical Society of Police, who represents the minority police officers, and then the POA, and then the governor would pick from there. Still have to have the advice and consent of the Senate. So let's say the governor picks those four outside of the mayor, and the senators say, no, we're not gonna work with these people. It requires a working relationship with the state, with the senators, and the local groups to figure out who's going to be the best one to curb crime in St. Louis.
Five members total?
Correct.
Okay,
yeah,
I thought it was six.
And to elaborate on what Nick just said, there's another tradition in the Senate that if a governor appoints someone, if the senator from the district where they live refuses to sponsor them, then they don't get presented on the floor.
Okay.
And so the way the compromise that Nick was able to work out with Senator Roberts ensures that the governor can't pick someone that is like reviled in the city of St. Louis, because then the senators from the city won't present that
person.
He can't
pick Tashar, for example.
Well, I'm sorry.
That was the first example that I thought of. I'm sorry. But is there a situation where something could happen? I'm not guessing Mike Kehoe is going to appoint someone who's BLM and anti-police. But is there a possibility that you still get a crazy person on the commission?
I mean, there's a possibility. I mean, anything can happen. We've seen in politics how, you know, these raging liberals are all of a sudden big Trump supporters just to get elected in certain districts. Could something like that happen? Sure. But I think the buy-in from the police unions, they've been through this. They know who the bad actors are, and they're going to figure out who's got the best working relationship, not only with the police, but with the community as well. So Donnie Walters, head of the Ethical Society of Police, we've talked a lot about community policing, and he's indicated, look, we need that trust from the people. When we're saturating the streets, ultimately, when the rate of pay increases hit, and we're able to recruit and retain, there has to be trust with the community. So we're not going to pick somebody who's just going to hardline it, you know, the police's way. There's going to be that community policing aspect
as well. That's Nick Schroer, state senator. Former state senator Jeff Smith is here. Jane is late and on her way.
She's still celebrating this bill.
Right. Yeah, I guess so. So you mentioned you don't like a few things in here. What don't you like?
You know, I mean, I always, you know, I supported local control when I was in the Senate. I've always supported local control of the police. So just like on principle, I think that
Not anymore. Exactly. I think that's what happened.
I think the city should control its own police. And I think that things usually tend towards equilibrium in politics, right? And I think the kind of response of the city electorate that we saw a week and a half ago was kind of residents in the city saying, we don't really want someone who's been associated with groups of people that are saying defund the police, right? And so I think it was kind of working itself out. And so I would have preferred for it to happen locally. But once I saw that it was the governor's top priority, and once it became clear that the mayor, you know, hadn't marshaled the forces among Senate Democrats to effectively mount a 2.5-month-long filibuster, then it was like, well, it's probably going to become law. I want to try to get some reform stuff on it. So I worked to get some stuff on there, which, you know, Nick was amenable to, like capping the phone rates for people in jails and prisons throughout the state so they can stay in touch with their loved ones, making sure that the state can't seize assets of people while they're incarcerated, that they're counting on.
So that's all part of the bill.
Yes.
That was like packaged in there. And then where did Chief Tracy end up on this? Because we know what Tashara's reaction was, and she blasted it, disrespectful, all this other stuff. Who cares what she says? But did Chief Tracy ever come around on this at all?
Well, Chief Tracy was part of the committee hearings, standing by Tashara, saying that he would rather work with Tashara than a board of individuals that he doesn't know. The interesting fact is the Police Chiefs Association actually came out finally this year in support of the bill, saying, can't tell you why, how we got here, but we are now in support of it. So I don't know if behind the scenes he kind of saw the writing on the wall and knew that we don't have the tools to effectively combat crime, and maybe this is the way out of it. I mean, the funding mechanism alone requiring that at least right now 22% of the funding from the city of St. Louis will go towards law enforcement, and it'll increase up to 25%. We also have commitments from leadership in the Senate and the governor's office. Hey, we'll review this stuff too in a supplemental budget if we have to put more funding there. But the number one thing, a lot of people ask, how did we get this done? And Kehoe's been great, just praising me left and right. But he was the ultimate change, the ultimate factor going around, absolutely working with other legislators like we've never seen, the two other governors that I've served under. This guy is building relationships, going in with statistics showing we have to do something. If we're going to build Missouri in the right direction and compete with all these other states, we have to get crime under control in the city of St. Louis.
Jeff, address that a little bit, because there is a different style. You didn't see this from Mike Parson, for sure.
Look, I don't think Governor Carnahan was the last governor that we had in the state that like walked the floors of the Senate going
really?
In and out of offices. Look, you know, like Jay Nixon was a Democrat, you know, my party.
He
didn't do that when I served with him. Matt Blunt certainly didn't do it when I served with him. Eric Greitens, not only did he not do it, but he like put the cell phone numbers of legislators on bill.
It was combative.
It was a little bit.
He was a Navy SEAL, you know.
Was he really?
Yeah, I just wanted to toss it in. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Who knew?
Do you remember the push-up contest?
Oh, yeah. So
I still think I could have won, but I'm just saying.
You know, and I actually thought that Parson was going to be a little more like that since he'd come up through the House and the Senate. But, you know, for whatever reason, that didn't turn out to be his style as governor. Look, you know, I'm up there in the halls every day. I see Kehoe every week walking in and out of House and Senate offices. He is a hands-on
governor. I see him more than I see certain representatives from the House side.
Well, I want to get hopefully our other panelists will be here eventually, maybe by 5 o'clock. But I want to come back to the city and to Shar and Kara in that race. But what's next, then, in the legislature?
There is so much room to talk.
A good point there. Maybe we block her from coming
His office is going through bill review, just making sure everything's constitutional. They do this on every bill.
No, but I mean, just overall, let me take, because you guys are on spring break. Thank God they work so hard. They got spring break coming up here.
Yeah.
But no, as far as legislative priorities, obviously the budget, but there were some birds that were just flying in front of my
there.
Face. What happened there? What's next? Legislative priority.
School choice is another priority for not only myself, not only the Freedom Caucus and Republicans, but Mike Kehoe as well. The school choice bill that we got done last year was, again, thanks to Mike Kehoe working the halls on the House side. So I know there are several different versions of school choice that are coming up. The budget, of course, there was talk at the very end of the week. There was a press conference done, and a lot of reporters were asking about a stadium deal, that all these different Republican legislators have filed a stadium deal tax credit package
for Kansas City. Right.
And look, I haven't seen it. I haven't seen any of these proposals. And that's going to be something we've learned from the TWA Dome or the Rams Dome. We're not going to let, you know, big NFL owners get rich or Kansas City Royals owners getting rich, taxpayers buying them a new stadium. So I'm curious to see what that approach is. But tax cuts, that's another one that the governor's been harping on. The income tax repeal, that's been slowly moving through the process. So we'll see. There's still a lot to do, and the fix to the big pro-life issue.
Jeff, what's the reality of what else might be accomplished? In other words, I like to cut to the chase. The getting rid of the state income tax, I don't think that's likely this year, right?
No, I don't think they're going to get rid of the state income tax this year. I think there's a chance that they
chip away.
That they maybe accelerate the current gradual, you know, reduction.
If we remove that floor and possibly go to a flat 4 this year, that's something I think could be done.
Yeah, I mean, there's still one of the biggest differences between this year and the last few years is that the Senate is really functioning.
That was deserved.
And, you know, and what that means, you know, when we were in early March last year, I mean, some days the Journal was still getting filibustered. And that means, like, the Journal.
By Republicans.
By Republicans. And that's the first thing that you have to do every day is approve the Journal, you know, of what happened yesterday. And, like, you know, you had that happening, and you had guys that, you know, were wearing overalls and filibustering based on the dress code. And this was all within the majority party, so Democrats really didn't have to do much work,
right,
you know, at least up until spring break. So they had their legs, and they were, you know, rearing to go. But I think that...
Is it basically, by the way, because two people are gone? Hoskins and Igel?
No, it's not. Well, I would say even the whole Rowden aspect to it. So you had two different factions.
Oh, that's right. Well, Caleb, yeah.
Depending on what side of the pendulum. Yeah, they all termed out at the same time. Now, I think when we started the year, there was still some of that personality aspect. But, you know, for the Freedom Caucus guys, we said, look, let's rise above that. We were here for a job. Let's get it done. Let's not let these personalities get in the way. And since the Democrats have been doing a lot of the filibustering and a lot of the fighting, it's kind of brought the Republicans back together stronger than ever. Hopefully we can keep this up.
All right, hold on. We're going to take our first break out here. It's a Reardon Roundtable live from the Knights of Columbus Hall in Cottleville. We got a Fish Fry Friday going on here. The crowd is a building. They're going to start serving the fish, though, here in about an hour and a half, an hour and 45 minutes. We'll take a break. We're coming back with more. Hopefully one more panelist on the roundtable coming up as well.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code SHAVE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code SHAVE. Enjoy.
Street Easy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie, but since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let Street Easy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
If you're thinking about GLP-1s for weight loss, listen up. You must make sure you're maintaining your muscle mass while you're losing weight. Otherwise, you can slow your metabolism and regain the weight. Omacid, a natural superfood protein shake, has been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. It optimizes and supercharges your metabolism so you can lose weight easily. Use Omacid with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at omacid.com. That's AlmaSed.com.
Think warm. Think palm trees. Think baseball. Hi, I'm MLB.com's Matt Monaghan. The long, dark freeze is over, and spring training is finally here. If you're a baseball fan looking for a quick, easy way to get all the scores, top stories, and best sound bites from Florida and Arizona, you're in luck.
I don't think people realize how good we are. I don't even know if we realize how good.
The Morning Lineup Podcast, a short, less than 10-minute baseball highlight show, is available anywhere on any platform you listen to podcasts on, 5 days a week. We can't wait to meet you there.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're live from the Knights of Columbus Hall in Cottleville on our Fish Fry Friday tour. The second stop we have on the panel with us this afternoon, a live Reardon Roundtable, former State Senator Jeff Smith, current State Senator Nick Schwer, and the third panelist I'm not even going to introduce because she was so damn late. She doesn't even deserve an introduction. Can you not plan ahead a little?
I was in the car for more than an hour.
Well,
there were some
good.
Strategic errors.
That makes me feel better.
She was touring Senate District 2.
We're going to get back into the mayor's race and some of the city stuff. Nick, let me start with you, though. The CR is apparently going to pass today. It's interesting. There's been a flip from Schumer. John Fetterman said he was going to vote for it. They're still maneuvering on Capitol Hill right now, but the deadline is 12:59:59. They have to get this done. Some people would like this to go for, I think Nancy Pelosi's trying to encourage a four-week continuation, and then they vote again. That gets repetitive, but it looks like they've solved something here. We have, by the way, Congressman Onder is going to join us here in the 5 o'clock hour, so he'll have something to say on this as well. But this is one of those things that keeps happening over and over, and I don't know if you have a sense whether this gains any fiscal sanity along the lines of what Trump is looking for, but they have to pass this in order to keep the government functioning.
I think minor fiscal sanity. I spoke with Onder a little bit, and he goes, look, I'm really not proud of everything that's here, but to move us in the right direction. And that's where I'm kind of between that mindset where Onder is and Thomas Massie. If you really want to start cutting, do it now. Don't kick the can. But don't wait this long. I mean, okay, let's do the continuing resolution now. If fiscal hawks start chipping away. But to me, it seems like theater. It seems like no matter, if the Republicans are in charge or the Democrats are in charge, there's always this huge blow up. And then somehow they get a deal done at 11:59.
Yeah. I mean, I'm glad we're not doing the. We're
hey,
not
Jane,
doing
just get all you guys today right
real
up
close?
On those microphones.
Is that
right,
better?
Kiss those microphones because otherwise, yes, people won't be able to hear you.
No, we need to stop this whole thing where we do this over and over. It's not really any way to run a railroad. And you have to start now because cuts take a long time because people start to figure out actually what this money's for. And then it starts to get really complicated. But you're going to have and I would try to get bipartisan support and get, Republicans and Democrats to sit in a room. I don't know how else you do it.
So look, here's the deal. The kind of dirty little secret is that over three quarters of the federal budget is not the stuff that they're talking about, right? Because over three quarters of the budget is Medicare, Social Security, defense spending, and interest on the debt. And nobody's really talking about anything meaningful in any of those areas. And there isn't a way to change the interest we pay on the debt because we don't want to default. So all of the stuff that Elon is doing with Doge, all of these arguments around domestic,
the transgender hamsters,
all the stuff around domestic discretionary spending. Remember, that really doesn't get at the real issue that's going to cause a problem.
Yeah. Unfortunately,
for this country.
I have to agree with that. Yeah. And this is something I've been preaching about for a long time. And there's an interesting little tie into that today because former Wyoming Senator Alan Simpson died today at the age of 93. I loved Alan Simpson. He used to do a radio thing with Senator Kennedy years ago, where it was like a point counterpoint. I aired it when I was out in Columbia. But Senator Simpson, by the way, he was cool wordsmith before Senator Kennedy from Louisiana. Alan Simpson was a guy that was full of wit. I had a chance to meet him and spend time with him about 13 years ago in the aftermath of the Simpson-Bowles Commission, which came out with a bunch of recommendations. Now, they talked about the entitlements, and Alan Simpson had to apologize for this. Here's what he said at one point. I don't think he should apologize, because he suggested in an email that Social Security and other entitlement programs had turned the country into a milk cow with 310 million tits. And then he apologized for that. He said, over the last 40 years, I love to see Fred's reaction when I said tits on the air, too.
Yeah.
I have my size 15 feet in my mouth a time or two. Why apologize for that? Because he's absolutely right. And what happened with Simpson-Bowles, with all these recommendations, the Grace Commission came first. Here's what we need to do. That was not really supported by the Obama administration. They kicked the can. They kicked the can again. They keep kicking the can. I'm pretty sure they're going to kick the can again. Okay. And I wish they weren't, but no one wants to tackle the serious stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. And I think that it's probably not going to happen under, the current governance structure, because if you look back historically, the only time that we can really deal with these big issues like, reforming Social Security is when you have divided government, because neither party wants to be the one to jump off the cliff
alone
and get bludgeoned by the other one. So I think both sides, if you put me and Nick in a room, we could probably in an hour come to some like broad agreement on, hey, we probably have to means test it.
We should pitch that to Trump. Just, hey,
Give Smith you, and you guys I in a row.
And blame the problem. These two.
He'd probably go for
them.
That. Yeah.
Yeah, and blame them.
But, you know, you probably have to means test it for the wealthiest retirees.
And I'm not opposed to that.
You probably have to gradually phase in an increase in the retirement
after those
age.
Of us at the table are retirement age. After that, right, younger people.
But we're very young for our age.
But, you know, most of this would not affect people over the age of 50 whenever they talk about these things.
If you do it quickly.
Right.
Every year that we wait to do it, it makes it harder to do it.
Well, it's going to be harder to do it because they're not going to do it.
Well, even look at Doge right now. Any of the different cuts, any of the things that we're talking about withholding money from, there are certain people that go, you know what, crazy. And they protest. And it's just to make those big changes that need to be done, I mean, the world would get set on fire.
Well, and look, you have to have leadership and you have to have the parties working together.
Yeah.
In the older days when you could have the Republicans in divided government work together and say, okay, we're going to jump off the cliff together like they did in 2008. They had to.
Yeah. In 1985. Greens,
that's what's going to happen when they have to do it.
That first raise Social Security retirement age from 65 to 67 was, you know, when Reagan was president and we had Democrats in control of the House and Senate.
Yes. And that and it does. And it forces both parties to swallow the pill and do it. And we've done that in times of crisis. But only you just feel like crisis is the only thing that will get people over the edge to get them.
Well, that's what we do. Yeah, we wait until things are
on fire.
Right. And then we try to fix it. And then we overdo it, which created the Department of Homeland Security, for example. There's Exhibit A in that. Nick Schwarz is on the panel. Jeff Smith, Jane Duker. But let me talk, Nick. Let's address the broader issues with Elon and with Trump right now. And my position a couple of days ago, maybe I said this yesterday, is there's a lot of complaints about everything that Trump hasn't done, even though he's only been in office for, I think, fewer than 100 days. In my mind, this is maybe the top of the second. Maybe it's only the bottom of the first. There's so much, and I get that there's, you know, uneasiness about the stock market and the economy, and we have inflation that's tailed off just a little bit. Egg prices may have come down just a little bit. There are concerns about the economy. I would agree to that. But my goodness, the way that some people are reacting to this, and it's not just Trump derangement, it's Elon derangement. We see them attacking Teslas and defacing them, and I have friends Instagram who hate Elon, calling him a Nazi. Yeah. It's just unbelievable.
They're calling him Musketeers. Anybody who supports Doge, and
I
do too. I'd label myself as a Musketeer. But no, I think, you know, the broader sense, anything that they do, there's a certain aspect of the left that will go crazy. And that's just where we are in politics nowadays. I'm glad that the Missouri Senate is finally getting their act together. I'm working with Brian Williams and Steve Roberts and even Carla May. We ended up having some of her bills in the big crime bill. But in the national sense, no matter what they do, it was day one and they're talking about, well, why aren't the gas prices down? Why isn't inflation down? Well, they're finally coming down. But there are also things that he's addressing. Trump's administration are addressing the war in Gaza, the war with Ukraine and Russia, and trying to get peace in the Middle East and peace overseas. And I think we're getting there. I think ultimately these deals are going to come to fruition within the next week or so. And we're already seeing gas prices, inflation, and all of that going down. So, you know, the thing that a lot of my friends who are invested in the stock market are worried about the tariffs. Mm-hmm. And I think that is going to be painful. And ultimately, it will end up in us having a even playing field with a lot of these countries that are taking advantage of us.
On the economic front, I mean, I think it would be fair. And look, we could be in a recession by the end of the summer. But if we have a roundtable with this panel late August, early September, where are we with the economy? Where is the situation? Well, look, they still have to renew the tax cuts. There's a lot still coming down the line. But the expectation game, and Jeff, I want you to comment on Elon, because your side, and I think it's still the 20%, is so bat playing crazy about Elon Musk. It's unbelievable. I see this unhingedness with the AOCs, et cetera. Now, it's not everyone. Even Chuck Schumer came over and said, yeah, we need to pass this bill to stop the government from shutting down. But don't you see a little overreaction on the part of the people on the progressive side who clearly are not part of the 80% of the rest of you who are sane? I don't know if I put you in that category, Jeff. I put Jane in the category, believe it or not. But you're more progressive. I think it's fair to say you're more crazy.
I'm sorry, Jeff.
Yeah, sorry, Jeff.
I would say a couple of things. Number one, his style really is not appropriate really for the way that a big organization works.
You're talking about Elon or Trump?
I'm talking about Elon.
Okay.
Like, to come in and to say and to send an email to everybody that works for a cabinet agency when the Secretary of State, when the actual people who run those agencies are saying, no, don't do that. This is not how we want to operate. It just breeds tons of confusion, uncertainty around all this stuff. I'm not saying that government agencies couldn't use a good, you know, a cleansing. Lot of scrutiny, a good cleansing. But to do it in that way where it's just lurching back and forth from thing to thing, and then the cabinet secretary saying, disregard an email you got. Don't worry, you won't be fired if you don't reply to that email by 5 p.m. or whatever. I mean, it just... It's not how...
Well, again, some of that's been peeled back. And we a week ago, we sat here and I was telling the story. The New York Times had reporting last Friday about the cabinet meeting that took place on Wednesday. And there were some shouting in there. And Elon, you know, Trump took the side of Rubio and Sean Duffy, the transportation secretary. So some of this has been peeled back. The other thing that happened this week is there was a judge in California that basically ruled that all the probationary employees at several agencies had to be rehired. So that's still going to be hashed out.
Yeah, and so... The point I'm making is move fast and break things. You know, the kind of mantra of Mark Zuckerberg and a lot of Silicon Valley, it's not necessarily applicable to the way government works. And I'm not saying...
But what is applicable to the way government works, Jeff?
Coming in, having Elon go in and maybe do a three-month or six-month deep dive with his team into each agency and then come in and present to the cabinet. Here's what we found.
But see, that never works. That's why I talked about Simpson Bowles and the Grace Commission. Now, Jane, here's you guys all will be able to react to this, but let me give you the scenario. I talked about it earlier this week. There was a story in the Washington Post Tuesday or Wednesday about $1 billion in cuts to the nation's capital because of some of the federal money that's being pulled back. All that the nation's capital, Washington, D.C., the District of Columbia, was being asked to do is go back to 2024 spending levels. 2025 spending levels are $1 billion more. $1 billion more. So that's a cut. That in the headline, a cut. That's not a cut. That's Washington. That's what you guys do in Jeff City. That's not a cut. It's saying we're going to keep it at this spending level because if any of us operated our lives or if any business did this, they'd be bankrupt. We would file for bankruptcy. There is a path there. But the government never has to do that. They can just build the debt, build the debt, build the debt. And all these local cities get to do the same thing, even if they have $700 million sitting in a bank account from a RAM settlement in ARPA.
Well, states don't get to do that because states have to balance their budget. But my other point that I wanted to make is that I think Democrats took the wrong posture from the start on this.
Yes.
Instead of... You know, so many people just going after Elon. Democrats should have said, there are sacred cows that we want to go after, too. We're gonna participate in this, and we're going to help you find waste, fraud, and abuse in the Department of Defense. Nothing hurts progressive goals more than when people see that government is wasting money.
I thought you were going to say crazy progressives.
Well, I mean, Democrats need to be more intentional and more passionate
and
than anybody
responsible.
About Amen. Making sure that government is working well, because that gives people faith that government can do something.
See, and the word you just said really struck me. First of all, I don't care anymore about the internal workings of the federal government.
Yeah.
Just like I don't care about how the state is picking their bureaucrats and if the bureaucrats are mad. I don't care about any of that. What I think Democrats should be focusing on is what is the true effect of what's being done. Don't scream before something happens. This whole idea of crying wolf, I mean, it really frustrates people because it's like, wait for something to actually happen before you come on.
The only guy that's saying that is John Fetterman. Like, it doesn't seem like
anyone
else is saying
that. I'm a Fetterman kind of gal.
On your side, at least. Hey, we got to take a break. Hang on. Jeff Smith is here. Current State Senator Nick Schor. Jane Duker. It's a Reardon Roundtable live from the Knights of Columbus Hall. It's Fish Fry Friday out in Cottleville. Hey, we are live out in Cottleville at the Knights of Columbus Hall. Man, the line is a building already here for the fish. Kevin, what time do you guys start serving the fish? At 4. Okay, that makes more sense. Wow, they start serving at 4, but the line has been building for a little bit. We're out here at the Knights of Columbus. The wind will just basically take you here if you get in your car. I don't even think you need to press the accelerator. It is whipping up. We still have serious storms that might move through the area here in a couple of hours, and we'll keep you posted on that. Jane Duker on the panel, current State Senator Nick Schor, and former State Senator Jeff Smith. So, Jeff, I'll start with you. There was a debate between Tashar and Kara Spencer last night. Is this true?
It is true.
How did that go?
You know, I think it kind of reflected the momentum that we saw coming out of last Tuesday's election. Kara seemed to be kind of riding high and was, you know, did a really good job. You know, the mayor didn't seem super excited to be there. So
you're so polite.
Yeah. Jane, all right, Jeff, hold your thoughts. Jane, what happened last night?
I mean, call it. The mayor got schooled. It was brutal.
Big time.
And she, and I'm talking even objectively. I mean, just she, you could tell her attitude. I mean, that, it just isn't playing well. And that's sort of the way she, remember, she was in Jeff City and acted the same way. It's a real turnoff for people because she just thinks she shouldn't have to be bothered to explain why
Is it a resignation of the fact that this is over? Or
it might be some of that. It's frustration that she would even that she would even be in this spot. Because, you know, what's really funny about this is I think everything was going fine for her until that snowstorm. And everything that everybody thought about for a long time finally all got connected. And at that time, it was basically almost too late for her to do anything about it. And it just confirms my first rule of politics, which is it's all okay until it's not. And when it becomes not okay, that it's just I don't know how she could ever turn that around.
Without the snowstorm, there was the 64 trip story that came a few weeks before the snowstorm, and you could not have planned that any better if you were Kara's team, because that story about all the trips primed people to be angry.
I think you're right about that.
And then she left during the snowstorm, which, I mean, I couldn't think of anything stupider.
Did you heard it last night, Nick?
Yeah. So I live streamed it today. And again, trying to be objective and not biased. Yeah, she got it handed to her. And Kara was very polished. She knew what she wanted to talk about. And she was able to hit, you know, certain things. She was able to respond in a one-minute time. She was able to respond to the garbage answer that Tashara would lob out there and then answer the question as well. Even though I didn't agree with some of her positions, she was able to eloquently put it out there and respond to the distractions from Tashara. Tashara seemed very mad. She seemed upset that she was even there.
And word salad. She had a lot of word salad.
Made no sense.
I got to get those.
And blaming other people, even blaming Kara Spencer for not going to the Capitol to meet with senators. So it was strange. Kara. I'll give her an A.
Jeff, you have the electorate is obviously split a little bit. You have people, certainly I think in the southern part of St. Louis City, that are not quite as progressive and they're more white. But I bring it up from this perspective. There was a piece in the Post a couple of days ago about how the progressives have lost their faith in Tashara. So on the one hand, you have people that are concerned about crime and basic services and they don't like to fund the police and they're ready to move on and they pick Kara Spencer. On the other hand, you have all these people that supposedly were with Jones and they wanted to fund the police and they're mad that she hasn't defunded the police more. So that component plays into it as well. But who the hell do they vote for?
Well, I think what the progressive kind of faction in city politics needs to win citywide elections is they need energy. And because of some of the dissatisfaction among progressives with some initiatives and with her supervision of the jail and some other things, means that that energy that would get the people canvassing, get the low dollar donations, get the buzz, it just really isn't there on the left for this election. Nope. And that means that kind of the more center left lane where Kara is occupying is the lane that has more energy right now.
And make no mistake, this is not going to be a high turnout election. Okay,
like 30,000,
which is sad.
I mean, it's really sad. It's not. I mean, I think last election it was like 29%. I think we'll be lucky to get to 25% turnout.
There were 30,000 votes in March
deciding the mayor.
Let me get a few more topics in here. My St. Louis County Councilman Dennis Hancock, who is the former mayor of Fenton, has entered the race to challenge Sam Page for county executive. Now, there's a part of me. I'll handicap this the way that my gut told me. I'm not sure. I've seen strong Republican candidates come close but not manage to win in St. Louis County. So I'm not sure if this is a race that he should be in. On the other hand, I think back, I knew Dennis did a great job in Fenton. Maybe you need someone who's the adult in the room, if you will. But Jane, you know the landscape. You guys know the landscape better. Is this a race he should even be in right now?
I think what the story is here is I think there's going to be a Democratic primary, and that's going to be the bigger problem for Sam Page. And because I think if a strong Democrat comes in, someone like Brian Williams, I mean, he'll shellack Sam. And
he's announced that he's looking at the race right now.
Very strongly, he says. And there are others.
Sounds like Trump. I'm going to be considering it very strongly.
Looking at it very strongly.
I'll be emailing very strongly.
But people love him. I met him when I was in Jeff. Steve Butts introduced me a couple weeks ago. I never met him.
He's a great guy. But I also like the idea is that the Republicans, like when you leave that open, like that's, you know, when you didn't have a Republican challenger to Wesley Bell, when you didn't have, look, I mean, somebody needs to be sitting there. And I think it's smart of the Republican Party to make sure that if by some crazy chance Sam gets through a primary, that they have somebody there and that he doesn't get a free pass. So I actually support Dennis getting in.
And I kind of have, you know, the same reservations as you do, Mark. You know, I've seen really strong Republicans come close, but you know, in today's climate, I don't see a Republican winning that. You know, times could have changed, and I know Sam Page's stock has gone down with a lot of people. So I think he's very vulnerable right now from the left and the right.
Yep.
Let's wrap. Go ahead, Jeff.
Oh, just very quickly. You know, Bill Corrigan was a strong candidate. Was that 2010? Rick Stream was a strong candidate.
Yeah. Yeah. They all got close.
But very close. But one thing we got to remember, just because the demographics and the way that things have shifted in the region, the county probably gets a point more Democratic every cycle. And so it's that much harder than it was four or five cycles ago when it was really close. So I would bet on the Democratic nominee.
Let's close here with the most important topic of the day and the weekend and the next few weekends, college basketball. How about our Tigers last night, Nick Schwer? They did well. I was going to be sick to my stomach if they lost that game. They closed very strong. It was kind of an ugly game, certainly
very
through
strong.
About three quarters of it. They play Florida tonight. They've beaten Florida. Florida has four losses, and one of them is to Mizzou. When does your Tide play, Jane
Duker?
The
Tide is, I hope they don't meet, but I'm Mizzou and Tide. Tide's tonight.
Well, the last time they did meet, Mizzou walked away.
Yeah, they did.
I know.
This
is going to be a tough game. If they lose to Florida, I still think they're probably a 5 or a 6 seed. If they win, then I think they solidify the 5 seed. Matthew, SLU lost this afternoon. Is that true?
Oh,
they did lose. They made a tough battle of it, but they're out in the...
Will they make the tourney or no?
No. They had to win. Whoever wins that conference is going to make the tourney.
Yeah.
And... yeah, it's going to be a hell of a cup. This SEC tournament is incredible right now. Those games last night, you know, I watched that Oklahoma-Kentucky game, and the build-up to it with those announcers during the Mizzou game in the aftermath is, well, Oklahoma barely belongs in this building right now. Kentucky's so damn good. It comes down to a half second on the clock, and they throw up a shot that wins the game over Oklahoma. But, you know, Dennis Gates said it last night, and I'm agreeing with him. There should be 14 teams. There are 16 teams in the SEC. There should be 14 in this NCAA tournament. And I think
I agree.
There's a shot.
M-I-Z.
All right, ZOU. Thank you, Jeff Smith. Good to see you. Great to see you. James going to hang out for the next hour. We're coming back live at the Fish Fry at the Knights of Columbus Hall in Cottleville. Hang in there.
Get more at 971talk.com.